good morning, everybody. You're welcome to the Daily Digest with Jimmy Disu. And today is Friday. It's the last one for the week. My sympathies and condolences goes to those who were, you know, the families of those who are involved in Wednesday's rail accident. For those who lost their lives, may their souls rest in peace. And for those who are still alive, keep hope alive, okay? We hope that you survive this particular trauma that could jolly well have been avoided by sheer discipline. A major problem in this country is discipline. Even in the subject that we are going to talk about today, hate speech, it just takes discipline. It takes, you know, it takes for you, before you post anything in the social media, to have that discipline. Don't do things on impulse. Okay, don't do things on impulse. Today, like yesterday, we are going to talk about the legal aspect of hate speech. And yesterday, Dr. Yemi Onifade was kind enough to be with us from the UK. And he's kind enough again this morning. Hey, if this guy gives me a bill, I'm a dead man. I have to pay it in hard currency. Dr. Onifade, good morning.
Good morning.
I honestly can't thank you enough for giving us an hour of your time. I can imagine. Do you have a fair, like, okay, so because I know with some lawyers, if you just want to have a one, if you want them to write a letter, bill me, part of your time would have been how much in pounds sterling? Okay, we'll talk about it later, but we appreciate it.
I don't talk figures.
You don't talk figures, yes. He just tell the client, go and make a good substantial deposit. Okay, so Dr. Ifade, we were talking about hate speech yesterday. If you didn't listen, you didn't get to catch us yesterday, of course you can go to YouTube and you'll find it there. Just put Daily Digest with Jimmy Disu and it will come popping. Okay, so today there are the four things that you said you'd like to touch on. The first is incitement in international law. I think that incitement, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Nifade, incitement could be if what you have said has pushed other people to doing certain things, you know. And I think you hinted a bit at it, like what happened in Rwanda when some people were saying, oh, go and kill the cockroaches, and it pushed people to go kill between the Hutus and the Tutsis or something like that. Okay, that's what, yes. Then we said we're going to talk about the concept of universal jurisdiction. That is very, very crucial. Sometimes you think that I'm in Nigeria, I can get away with anything. Not knowing that sometimes international bodies could be interested. And you could jolly well be charged in another country. We'll go through that very quickly. Then you said that you'd like to talk about inchoate offenses and their completion. You will explain that when we get to that bridge. And you also talk about the ladder of prejudice. That's right. Okay, so let's take the first one about incitement. You mentioned something in passing yesterday, but you probably want to expand it a bit. But also knowing that we don't have that much time, and also people would love to call in. By the way, I've gone to battle the marketing department to please reduce the advert time, and I hope that takes place here now so we have more time to talk. So, Dr. Onifade, let's start from incitement in international law. What did you have in mind when you said this?
Okay. Incitement is like instigating something.
Yes.
You know, when you prompt somebody to do something. And because when we talk about hate crimes, and in this case, hate speech.
Yes.
As I said yesterday, it's quite fluid. So hate speech itself could be termed broadly as applying any expression speech which is abusive or insulting or intimidating, harassment. However, it's not just a speech, it incites violence, it incites hatred or discrimination. You see, hatred, violence, discrimination against somebody or a group of people based on their, in this case, we're talking ethnicity.
Yes.
So whilst that hate speech becomes so broad, to pin it down, the international law and domestic law as well looks at it as incitement.
Hmm.
So, as I pointed out yesterday, go and kill the cockroaches. That is a euphemism. But for those who you're speaking to, you say it's dog whisper. The dog whisperer. It's a dog whistle, rather. It's a dog whistle.
Yeah.
The dog can hear it.
It's like with the local dogs. When you say a local dog, catch him.
Catch him, yes.
Catch him.
So the dog knows. The dog can hear it, but other animals can hear it.
Yeah.
So it's dog whistle politics. So,
is there a specific penalty for that?
It depends. No, there's no specificity in the penalties, because if you incite somebody to murder, it's a different thing from incitement to genocide, for example. And then it becomes a different matter if it becomes a war crime. So those kind of things. So it's not a specific penalty. The court will decide, as it says. The Statute of Rome, for example, does not indicate a particular penalty. But in a lot of instances, the courts look at commensurate penalties. And the important thing here is that whilst things are being said now and people think there is no penalty, there's nothing happening.
Mm-hmm.
After the election, if there is violence, it will be traceable back to all the kind of things that are being said now.
Yes.
Are being said now on the social media and in public spaces.
Even yesterday, you gave the example of people who are still being prosecuted for things that happened during the Second World War.
Correct. And if you remember, and I will touch this later, okay? If you remember after the elections in Ivory Coast.
Yes.
Laurent Gbagbo.
Yes, Gbagbo, yes.
And yes, he was taken to the international court. Even Uhuru Kenyatta. Uhuru Kenyatta, you remember?
Yes.
Yes. So these things are not totally without consequences. So the incitement, the way the courts have looked at the incitement is that you and I can be sitting in my private living room and I can talk all the nonsense I want. Okay, I could be instigating you, I could be inciting you, but that has not reached the threshold. But the public incitement, well, when I put it in public, i.e. Facebook, WhatsApp, and any other newspapers, when I put it in public, that is where it moves from just ordinary incitement to something that is punishable in international law. Mm. So that is the way international law sees it, and that is why it's called incitement. Incitement to genocide, incitement to committing other in the old Yugoslavia, for example, during the Kosovo Bosnia-Herzegovina war and the Serbian war, there were a lot of crimes committed, sexual crimes, because rape was being used as a weapon of war.
Mm.
But those who were held responsible were people who have been saying things like, the Muslim women of Bosnia-Herzegovina will bear the next generation of Serbian fighters.
Wow.
Something in that region. It seemed totally innocuous initially, but if you look at the consequence and what happened later, then you begin to see. There were graffiti on the wall depicting women of Bosnia-Herzegovina, Muslim women, as sexual objects.
Hmm.
So the artist can just say, I was only drawing something. But what happened later showed that these drawings, these statements, actually encouraged, i.e. incited these things. And the International Tribunal on the War Crimes in Yugoslavia actually took that into cognizance when it was dealing with people. So that is what incitement is, and it is recognized in international law. Now, I move from that to what I call the inchoate offenses.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to that, my example. We're talking in my living room. I may be saying some very nasty things, but the moment I put it in public, whether it was my intention or not, the people who read it can become incited, and therefore my offense is complete. It's like saying we're planning to go and do something bad, and they say conspiracy to rob, conspiracy to murder, conspiracy to murder. Now, it is not until the murder is complete or the murder is carried out before the conspiracy is complete. The moment you begin the plan, the moment you start to act on it, that conspiracy is complete. And that is what is ongoing. So, incitement to genocide, the genocide itself does not have to have happened before the incitement is complete. And that is why they're inchoate offenses.
Can I ask what like sounds like a dumb question? What exactly is genocide? I have an idea, but I'd like it well defined, you know, just so that, yes, we hear about genocide, you know, is it genocide? Is it the act? Is it a physical act of attacking people, or you know, what exactly is genocide?
It is the act of killing with intention, to wipe
killing
out
the with gene. Intention to wipe. Okay,
to wipe out the gene. The gene. You want to kill the gene. Genocide. You want to kill the gene. The genealogy.
Okay.
You want to wipe out that race. You see. So if you have a lot of incitement against a certain ethnicity, then you can see how that can easily lead to the, some kind of violence with the intention of wiping out that ethnicity. Now, maybe not off the surface of the earth, but off a particular geographical location.
Physical, right?
So, yes.
Physical, yes.
The incitement to the physical. Now, the physical does not need to have happened for the inchoate offense of incitement to be complete. And that is the way international law looks at it. So, if you begin to say, he who buys from the Igbo man is a bastard, what you're doing is you're creating avoidance in the mind of the non-Igbo people. And by creating such avoidance, you're going up that ladder of prejudice, which I will touch on later, and you will see how it leads to very, very bad things. That way, you are guilty of incitement.
You know,
now, you can...
Okay, please finish, sorry.
You can say, I'm doing this in Nigeria, therefore, I'm okay.
Yes,
there's no law against it. And this is where the universal jurisdiction comes in. Because the universal jurisdiction applies. The Statute of Rome, for example, which is the statute that created the International Criminal Court, the Statute of Rome tells you that the court shall have jurisdiction over natural persons pursuant to the Statute of Rome. So any natural person, if your country has signed up or your country gives the permission, or your country is unwilling but gives the permission that you be tried, it can be. But
are international, we signed up, though?
Yes, we are. Nigeria is, yes.
Yes.
But the universal jurisdiction even goes slightly further. And this is where people might find, because it's a kind of jurisdiction that can be assumed not only by the international courts, but by countries where the offense is deemed so bad that it is a crime against everybody, a crime against humanity.
Mm-mm.
You remember Augustino Pinochet?
Oh, yes, of Chile.
Yeah, of Chile.
Yes.
You remember where he was arrested in the UK to be tried for crimes committed whilst he was president in Chile?
Yes.
So that is one of the kind of things that falls under that universal jurisdiction. So you commit the crimes in a different jurisdiction, and when you find yourself in another jurisdiction, because that crime is deemed as so bad, it can be tried there. It has universal jurisdiction. So crimes like incitement to genocide, incitement to ethnic hatred, and all those things could fall under universal jurisdiction where the act, the physical acts, have been committed.
Okay, let me tarry a while, because you know from yesterday we did have people who wanted to ask questions. I don't want us to go so much and not give people the opportunity to ask the question. So our lines are open, 0700-993-993-993, and the female line, the line for females. Doctor, we're here. We are female friendly. You know what it is. So
zero That's one. Good.
So we have this line specially for women, 01465-7190, essentially so that we men can live in peace. I hope that I haven't committed any offense there. Let's pick the first caller. Hello, good morning. Let's pick the first call. Morning.
Good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Morning, sir. Please go on straight.
Lucky Lola from Maduro.
Yeah, morning.
Please, how can I see a world in without people referring to hate speech? Because a politician once said that he doesn't read any social media message anymore, that whatever he do, you know, it gives him high blood pressure and all that. So I want to ask, how can I say something the way it is without, you know, people, you know, tagging it as hate speech?
Okay. Yes, that's a good one, Doc.
Yes.
Well, I, first and foremost, you will answer him, but let me just paraphrase my thoughts. I think common sense will tell you what hate speech is if you are directing some kind of speech at a particular ethnic group or set of persons. There must be discretion in that, isn't it? Can it really be defined in particular words, Doc?
It is difficult, but not impossible.
Okay.
So, facts are sacrosanct. And if 1 + 1 = 2, then 1 + 1 = 2. The fact that I call it 2 does not necessarily make it hate speech. But there will be situations where I know that 2 is in danger. And I refer to 2 because I know there is dog whistle here.
Okay.
Now, this takes us very, very cleanly to what I call the ladder of prejudice. It is it's an old theory from the 50s by one sociologist called Gordon Allport,
okay,
where he talks about anti-locution. Anti-locution means talking against.
Okay.
It sounds initially as totally harmless.
Yes.
So it's banter, you know, and it grows from there. So yes, you can state facts, but those facts are not, when you state them in the wrong context, we're having elections and you are saying anybody who votes for an Igbo man is a bastard. Now,
is that hate speech?
It will be hate speech.
Wow.
It will be. Yes. Because you're talking of the context of voting. You're talking, you are speaking against a particular ethnic group.
What about abuse? Somebody in one group I belong to posted something where a particular ethnic group were referred to as Olori Buruku and stuff like that, you know. Is that kind of hate speech, where you abuse a certain ethnic group?
Because you lump them all together.
Yes.
It is hate speech. It may not have got to the point of incitement.
Okay, but it's hate speech in its context anyway.
It's hate speech in it. Because don't forget that definition of hate speech, which is assault, abuse, intimidate, to cause hatred, discrimination, and all those kind of things. It is hate speech. It may not have got. And the danger, this is where I refer to this ladder of prejudice. On the ladder of prejudice, Gordon Allport, who came up with this idea, had 5 levels on the ladder.
Oh, okay. So we will take the 5 levels of the ladder when we come back, okay? I need to go on break. But, Doc, don't worry, today's break will be, how many minutes do we have? 7. How many? We still have like we had yesterday. Okay. All right. I have to go downstairs and fight them up. is the Daily Digest with Jimmy Disu. We'll take a short break and then we'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. Daily Digest returns in a moment.
Yeah, welcome back to the Daily Digest. I'm so sorry, Doc, that we held you for so long. I can assure you it won't happen again, okay? Sorry about that.
Okay, thank you.
No, it won't happen again. It's never happen again. So we were talking about inchoate offenses and their completion.
Yes.
You were trying to explain something?
Yes.
Please go on, sir.
So the questioner has asked, whether if he states something that is true, he's not allowed to tell the truth.
Yes.
So, and I was saying that there are certain circumstances where one should be circumspective. So, let me give an example of the old fire in a theater.
Okay.
We're sitting in a theater watching a film or something, and somebody lights a little fire, and another person shouts, "Fire, fire, fire!" Everybody rushes out. You see, just the fact that there was a little fire or a cigarette fire, and the way you shouted fire has caused a stampede, which has led to people's death. And then you say, "Oh, it's not my fault. I saw a fire now. It's a fact." So you can see that the context in which it is used, and that's the kind of things they look. So the inchoate offense is complete the moment the incitement becomes public. The moment you put it on WhatsApp,
the offense is complete. Essentially, this calls for a lot of caution. It calls for a lot of caution. Don't forget, Doc, that the social media is a relatively new phenomenon that a lot of people are not used to. Back in the day, for example, it would be filtered. Back in the day, we didn't take live telephone calls. Back in the day, we didn't have the social media. So whatever you want to put out in the media anyway would have been filtered by the editors and so on and so forth. But the world is completely intolerant, and correct me if I'm wrong, and that there are no excuses for this kind of what I would call indecent behavior, criminal behavior. And that is what our people need to, we need to stress to our people. Can you say, for example, I would say, if you get a WhatsApp message and you want to forward it, why don't you tarry a while? What's the hurry?
If you forward a WhatsApp message, you're taking responsibility for it. There's nothing like forwarded as received. No, once you forward it, you are now disseminating that information.
Yeah, because you're responsible. I see that phrase a lot, forwarded as received, as if you want to excuse yourself from it. And just for those who didn't listen yesterday, he talked about administrators of WhatsApp groups who will be held responsible for anything. What's the time frame by which this kind of thing can be on a platform? Because an administrator has a problem. If, for example, somebody posts it and I screenshot it, okay, within a minute before he can take it down, how does he absorb himself of that liability?
Well, that becomes a question of facts in court, if it gets to court. Because if he has taken reasonable steps,
yes,
then it is seen as fair enough. It is if he has not taken the reasonable steps or the required steps, then there's a negligence, a criminal negligence there. But if he has taken steps, but somebody then sabotaged it one way or the other.
Yeah.
I mean the jurisprudence is still developing on this WhatsApp matter. Don't forget, it's okay. A new phenomenon. Like you say.
Yes.
The jurisprudence is still developing, and it will get to a point where we can definitely say this is what the jurisprudence in that particular matter is.
Does this also affect something like retweeting? It's just as
bad. Of course.
Bad. Yes.
It's just as bad, yes.
Just as bad.
Yes.
Okay, what about false information? Outright false information. Is that a civil matter?
It could be civil, it could be criminal.
Criminal.
False information could be libelous.
Yes.
It could be slanderous. So there are, it could be form part of what you call defamation laws, defamation matters. Mm. But you still have what you call criminal libel. Or that false information itself could be a form of incitement.
Yeah. Okay, I tell you what it was. I had a politician in the last election, not this one's last election, who came and said, "Oh, on live radio, that as we speak, a particular ethnic group were not being registered then, not even now," and I told him, I insisted that he has to take it back because it could have started something.
Yes.
Do you understand?
It could itself be a form of incitement.
I locked him down.
So if those people from that ethnic group now start a riot and they start fighting, and it turns out that the statement itself is not true, that politician could be held responsible for inciting those riots.
Okay, I have another caller on the line. I want to take a bit more calls today. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Morning, Pastor Ladipo. Morning.
This is Pastor Ladipo calling from Orilegum.
Yeah.
Now, Uncle Jimmy, what about a situation where you either said something or tweet something and someone else amplified that thing and that thing is misconstrued? Will you still be held liable when you are called to explain? He said, "That is not what I meant, but I don't know how this person amplified it." Please let him clarify that.
No, I want you to clarify your own part. What do you mean by amplify?
Thank you, sir. Maybe I said something, and someone else just add a voice and twist it, and maybe give it another coloration. That is what I meant.
I would assume, Doc, that it's the person that gave the coloration that will be held responsible, isn't it?
Okay. It's a slippery slope.
Oh, really?
Yes. Let me go back to that ladder of prejudice I was going to adumbrate earlier on.
Yeah.
So it starts with antilocution. Antilocution means speaking against. Antilocute, speaking against. It will be things like, those people are this, those people are that, all the Yoruba people are this, all the Hausa people are that, all the Igbo people are this. No, it seems totally innocuous. But according to Gordon Allport in this theory, that creates a basis. A majority of people might not go more than that, but that creates a basis for people who want to move one step up that ladder. And one step up that ladder is avoidance. So from antilocution to avoidance.
Hmm.
Don't buy from those people. Don't sell houses to those people. Don't sell land to those people.
Okay. So even even agents who have been through
yes.
the list, and they say,
yes.
They say, "Oh, we want Indians for this property." Then they say, "No,
yes.
Igbo." I've seen that.
Yes.
You could be
so.
Helped.
Don't sell to. So you see, you have moved from one step of seemingly innocuous antilocution to avoidance. And he uses the example of the Second World War, where the way the Jews were treated. It was initially there was all this stupid, false information, false things about Jews. Jews are this, Jews are that, mm-hmm. and then it went to don't buy from the Jews.
Wow.
And then once that avoidance is complete, where people isolate minorities or other ethnic groups, it moves to the next one. It creates the perfect environment to move to another step up the ladder, and that step is called discrimination.
Hmm.
So you have moved from antilocution, which is just like banter, which is just like insulting one another. We have moved now up to avoidance, up to discrimination.
Hmm.
And when discrimination becomes either formalized, practiced every day, it gives room for another fewer group of people in society to move another step up, and that step up is physical attacks.
Hmm. But you see,
you can see how they are going up and
up.
Amplifying it. A fewer people, They go up, and then the final step of that is the genocide we saw in concentration camps and all those things during the Second World War.
You see,
it all started with the innocuous antilocution. Sorry.
You see, since I started this advocacy on Tuesday, I've had a lot of cynical people who say that, oh, you're just making a mountain out of a molehill. It's not that important. It will never get to us. I've even heard people say, who knows me? Is that the right attitude to have?
It's the wrong attitude to have, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's the wrong attitude to have, because everybody's little contribution goes towards the final outcome. So if you are, as I said, majority of people will be at this bottom, this anti-location, this bottom of this ladder.
Yes.
And very few will be at the top.
Yes.
But if that bottom is not well established, the next level of the ladder would not be able to come in place.
Okay.
So everyone thinks I'm inconsequential for what I say. It's just nothing. Yes, what you say may be nothing now, but it could feed something. That is what this caller just asked.
Yeah.
Somebody amplifies it. Because you have built the foundation for it.
Hmm.
In science, when you research something, some scientists will get somewhere, they build a foundation with all the... Another scientist comes and builds on it.
On it.
He doesn't just take the credit for it. He refers to the person who started it as well. So your own contribution may seem nothing, but at the end of the day, you're part of that problem.
Okay,
since you're not part of the solution.
Okay, we have so many calls coming in, so let me take the next one very quickly. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Morning, sir. Quickly.
This is Chief Joseph.
Yes.
From Okwafo, Brad.
Yes.
Please, the issue of hate speech and the amplification.
Yes.
The analyst there is citing World War, Rwanda, and other places. Don't we have such cases in Nigeria
that you can
which have happened to us in the past?
Okay, that's a good one.
How are we amending it? Because going by things happening in Nigeria, it goes that this law is used to suppress people from hearing their suffering and what is happening to them.
Okay.
Just like this present government that is trying to exist.
Okay.
So I'm to even the same kind of government.
Okay.
Look at his kitchen cabinet. You hope know it's in place in government. Are they not something that we could start having on?
Okay.
But if somebody say it's a hate speech, we are allowing things to continue to linger. We are not speaking up from our internal problems.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's a defeat to all of us.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir. We only allow 1 minute, and I think your point has been made. Doc, please take that off so I can see him. Doc, the first question he asked was, do we have any Nigerian example we can give? But he is also worried that because of these, what you call stringent laws, people might not be in a position to express themselves, express their suffering, express their suffering and the difficulties they have. To prepare you, I will say that you can always express yourself and the things you you can always express yourself and the sufferings you are going through without avoiding using hate speech. You can even make your point very vociferous, picking your words carefully. Okay? Picking your words carefully and reasoning it out. You don't come and just make general statements that can get you into trouble worldwide. People need to understand that. It's a matter of the use of language and the action therein, but I leave it to you.
I agree with you. I'm reluctant to talk about specific incidences in Nigeria because there have been so many. But I don't know if you remember the Zango Kataf incident some time ago in which General Zamani Lekwot had to face some consequences. He went through,
yes,
he got,
yes,
and all those kind of things. There's so many things. We can even go back to our civil war and see what happened during the civil wars and see how we got where and how. But it would be too contentious and we'll find ourselves arguing about very little points, and we won't have the time of the day. That's why I make the general expression, general examples, and look at. But going into specifics in Nigeria will take all of the time, and we will be arguing over little details and facts, and that's why I've avoided using Nigeria. But I want us to learn from the experience, international experience. Oh. That's why I've used Kenyatta, Gbagbo, and all the rest of them.
No, okay, okay. What about the question he asked about expressing yourself to show the suffering and anger that you have?
You can express yourself. That is not hate speech at all. Yes. But just because I'm expressing myself about what I'm suffering, do I have to blame a whole group of people? Mm. Do I have to talk against a group of people? Mm. Those people, the government of the day, speak up against the government and say, the government is doing this to me.
And
I'm paying
direct.
Too much taxes. I'm be direct. Not all those people of a particular ethnic group. And that is the difference. Nobody is saying you cannot speak up. You can speak up. There's freedom of speech, yes. But your freedom to speak and say things ends where the rights of other people to exist begin.
Yes.
Don't deprive them of their right to be.
Yes.
You can express, you can say things. There's nobody gagging you.
Mm-hmm.
But to come and say, it's those people, it's those Cameroonians, they are the responsible. It's those Ghanaians, they are responsible. That is what is wrong.
Okay, Doc, we have to go. It's 9:51, and I got to start rounding up. I can't thank you enough for taking so much of your time in 2 days, and I do apologize for the long break. Next time you come on this program, I can assure you it won't be that long. That's a hate action, almost abusing the time. So in that case, I'm guilty. You can send your bill. Thank you very much, Dr. Onifade. We can't thank you enough. We'll be calling on you in future, maybe not immediate future, but to educate us on things like this. It's very important. We'll continue doing it. Some people think we are making a big fuss over nothing. God help you if you fall into this trap. Thank you very much, Doc. And have a nice
Thank you.
Have a nice weekend.
Thank you very much.
One of these days, I'll come and have tea in your house. And still,
you're very welcome.
And still, the shirt that you wore yesterday, I have my eyes on it. Okay. That's where we're going to end it for today. You all know I talked to Dr. Yemi Onifade, who is a legal practitioner in the UK, and we spoke about the legality or otherwise of hate speech and so on and so forth. Tomorrow, I'll have Lanre Idowu. We're going to look at the same subject and use it to round up our discussion for the week on this issue of hate speech. And we will look at it vis-a-vis also the media. What is the media contributing to this? And so on and so forth. So that's what we'll be doing tomorrow. Next week, we'll probably start the week taking a critical look at this accident that took place, because it could have been avoided. So by that time, I'm hoping we would have gotten some information. That's the accident between the bus and the train, and so we might be bringing in our traffic specialist, Adenosi Patrick. He might be with us in the studio for us to take a critical look at how these things can also be avoided, and maybe we'll also take maybe put a call through to Professor Fabanwo, who did a wonderful job within the limitations of what they have, and we must thank them for that. These are human, they can only work with what has been provided for them, and I think they did the best that they could under the circumstance. And don't forget how I explained. So if you're being critical on the social media about the fact that they were treated outside, we've been told that that is normal practice with an emergency like this. I don't see how you could easily have accommodated 86 people turning up at the hospital at the same time. So the most sensible thing to do would be clear an area where you can at least apply initial first aid. So that's what we'll be looking at on Tuesday, God willing. Well, I'd like to thank you all for listening. I'll be back here tomorrow at 9 o'clock. It's The Discourse with Jimmy Sidhu tomorrow, brought to you by MTN. Until then, enjoy yourselves and don't go away. Wait for What's Up Lagos. See you tomorrow. Bye.
And I want to assume that you would run because I want to give the listeners context for the conversation.
In 2019, you were running mate to Atiku Abubakar. What did you learn then that you will not repeat this time?
Yes, when is the president coming out to address us?
There's a few things. One, I have a burden and a passion for young people.
The fact that you have elected a man does not mean then you begin to order him around. The president will do whatever is good for the country at any given time.
Mr. Adesina, isn't the president responsible to the people?
What should the next president do to root out stakeholders who are complicit?
You fire those that need to be fired, get fired.
It's looking like a brand new Chelsea, attacking with so much fluidity. And what can you say about that, Martin? I know you follow Chelsea quite closely.
I live close to the Chelsea training ground. That's what you mean by that. I'm not